Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's On The Box. Welcome to Anfield Index's revamped On The Box podcast, a TV show podcast on the channel. And I'm your host, Gags Tandon. Thank you, firstly, to everybody who listened to the Stranger Things podcast last week. And if you haven't heard it, why the hell haven't you? Make sure you go and check that out. Make sure you check out the show as well. However, today's show is about one of this summer's hottest shows, the HBO hit murder mystery, The Night Of. To join me in discussing this show, we have one half of the AI Comic Pod and host of the new AI Spotlight podcast. It's Mr. Rory Greenfield. Welcome to OTB, Rory.
It's my first time.
It's your first, unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Not so, seeing that there's only been a few handful of podcasts until you get involved, and then they're going to be once a week, knowing you, mate. So,
they're going to be mad now. It's going to be fun, this is. Now, everybody will want to be a part of this one. And talking about people who wanted to be a part of this desperately. She doesn't need any introduction. She's fucking everywhere. It's my right hand, left hand, whatever, second in command, Ms. Nina Kauser. How are you doing?
You master bitch. I'm good.
You master bitch. You know what? You watched this show just last week.
I watched it in a day.
Look at this.
Did you really only watch it last week? Oh my
yes.
God.
That's why she remembers so everything.
It's really fresh and, just putting it out there, watched it in a whole day because, you know, that's what us lonely spinsters that don't have children do. We have so much time on our hands.
This is Nina's Christmas, The Night Of. Like, basically, you know what? It's fantastic, though, because you'll add a fresh perspective to this, so you'll know there'll be little gaps for me and Rory, obviously, that you can fill in on, because obviously it's been a while for me. It was in the summer that I watched it. I haven't gone back. I didn't get a chance. Rory, what about you? Same as me, I think. Was it in the summer, or was it a bit later?
Yeah, no. It was when it was released, really. I watched it all pretty quickly when it was all on Sky On Demand or whatever. But yeah, it was going back a few months now.
Okay, right. So this show, pretty damn good. This is the non-spoiler part. So obviously people, I said this last week as well. This is going to be a spoiler-filled show. The first 5-10 minutes or so just now, we're going to talk about where we rank it, how we thought good we thought it was without spoiling it. So if you want to listen to that, you can, if you haven't seen the show. But after that, yeah, you might want to bog off. So ladies first, and then where did you rank this one then? You know, we watch a lot of TV. I don't know, actually. I watch probably a lot more TV than you do, but where would you rank it in overall? It's a one series show, it seems, at the moment. Where would you rank it in terms of captivating you as a viewer?
Well, I like the non-commitment part, that it is only one season
and eight episodes.
And 8 episodes. That it took me like literally 5 months to watch 2 seasons of Prison Break because, you know, there's just so many episodes, I can't deal with it. Had a bit of time off. All you need to know is, Gags, I watched it in a day, 8 episodes in a day. That just tells you everything. It was highly addictive. As soon as I watched one episode, I really needed to know what was going to happen in the next. I only watched it last week. I think it was Christmas Eve. I had the day off. I stayed up till 6 a.m, watched it, was absolutely rank Christmas Day. Wow. And to make it, to just to not give any spoilers away, I've recommended it to 5 very important people to me, and 3 of them are hooked and are watching it as and when they can because they're working.
Wow, that is pretty good.
It's really good. It's so intense.
It is. Where do you rate it then? Can you rate it?
In that genre, because obviously there's lots of different genres that I watch and dabble in that kind of serious drama kind of genre, it's really hard for me because I've not seen anything like this. Like, I've not seen anything remotely serious. This is as serious as it gets for me. I watch things like Californication, Suits. You know, this was serious stuff. I've not seen Making a Murder, so I couldn't compare it to that. Do you know what I mean? This, for me, in that category, it's the highest because it's the only thing I've seen.
That's fair enough. Rory, how about your point of view on this, mate? How good was it?
I think it's the best thing that was produced last year on TV.
Wow.
And I've watched quite a lot of the series that I think you're going to cover and have covered already. Stranger Things I'd loved, but I just saw the acting in this and the development over 8 episodes, which is kind of crucial because, you know, like we were talking before we came on, and there's a lot of things that are 24 episodes. And I don't think they get as much development out of their characters in 24 episodes than this does in 8. I just saw the transformation of the characters, which I know we're going to go on to, and the acting was just absolutely stellar. And it didn't need bells and whistles. It didn't need, you know, things that other series need in terms of the budget and the grandeur and stuff. It's just extremely good storytelling, an incredible script, and just brilliant acting. So, yeah, for
writing
me in this genre,
and the direction was unbelievable, wasn't it?
It's just, it's almost perfectly done. I think, you know, there's a couple of minor points, but, you know, there's no fat to trim off. It is what it is. And you don't, you know, a couple of episodes in, I thought, okay, how are they going to make this a full story? You know, where is it going to go? Because he's already been caught and, you know, all the rest of it. But they made it just perfectly. And every episode was just left you wanting more. And as Nina watched it in a day, and I only watched it in about 3, it just shows, you know, the kind of addiction element, you know, the binge watch of telly. But I don't always do that with a series like this because it's quite heavy, you know, at the same instance.
It's made like a long movie, I would say.
Yeah.
Made like a very long movie. If you've seen, obviously, the guy who directed this, I don't know how to say his surname, Steve Zalian? Something like that. But he's made movies like
you totally butchered that, and it weren't me. That's
yeah, Schindler's List. He's made that. Hannibal, Gangs of New York, American Gangster, Moneyball. You know, the Exodus, Gods.
He's only directed. Yeah, he was more. The big thing with him is he's only directed a couple of things, quite smaller things. He wrote.
Oh, though he's written those. He's written those. That's
he
right.
wrote those. Yeah, he wrote the screenplay those. To The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. He wrote Moneyball screenplay, which is quite interesting because that's completely aside. American Gangster, which you've probably seen gags and probably like, I would imagine. yeah, he wrote that as well.
Yeah, he wrote that. He didn't direct it. That's right. He wrote
No, those. But he's a producer and a writer by trait, and it's nice when they step up to limelight because it's quite rare that they do it, but it works so well in TV. Cause the screenplay's just
I mean, the guy's won
amazing.
BAFTAs, Golden Globes, you know, he's won everything. And then obviously you've got the teleplay by Richard Price, who apparently is massive as well, because he's done loads of novels and stuff. So basically it came with a production team that was very, very highly thought of. So yeah. I'm not surprised that it did.
And
bad
by
well.
HBO as well, you know, it's a big hitter in
well,
know,
this
Game
is
of
it,
Thrones
Game of Thrones.
Else,
they
yeah.
needed another show. Everyone knows, I mean, we can all sit here and talk about Game of Thrones till tomorrow. They needed something else to support it in the off season whilst Game of Thrones was off, and it didn't quite do that, but because Game of Thrones numbers are Netflix numbers, you know? That's the only show that at the moment that does Netflix kind of viewing figures, which is crazy. Okay, Rory, so where did you rank it, mate?
So it's a little bit difficult because it, you know, it isn't exactly like anything else I've ever seen before, really. So True Detective Series 1, I loved, and I put it pretty much right up there with that. I'd say it's different to Making a Murderer, although it's obviously got very distinct similarities, but that's a documentary. This is obviously, you know, drama. Breaking Bad's got similarities, but that's like 7 series long, you know, and it's not all wrapped up with one series, and the character development is very different in the way they do that. So, yeah, I'd say it's up there, top three of this genre. I absolutely adored it.
Making a Murderer, I mean, that's just a show you watch if you want to get totally fucking depressed. Like just go and get depressed.
Oh, it's so heavy, man.
It's too heavy, but it's unbelievably made. Unbelievably made. A documentary. Just can't believe they would make, they can't make any. But there's a whole show on that on the On The Box podcast. So if you're listening to this on the app, you can go find that. It was myself, Simon Bridges, and Paul Tompkins on that one. So, yeah, before I became host. But, yeah, I was a part of it, so it was dead good, not. Anyway, let's move on. The Night Of, so the plot. So this is where we're going to go into spoiler central, people. So if you haven't seen it and you're just listening for the sake of it, you might want to bog off. But if you want to know the story, yeah, stick around. So how should we go about this? It's I suppose we just start from the beginning, really. It's Nin, this is quite close to home, I suppose, a little bit, you know, the way it's a Muslim family in New York City. So a little bit like Manchester. we keep going there on pods, don't we? Yeah.
Oh, it's exactly like that. Exactly like
comic, comic pod. Yeah, so it's
just when you close your eyes, you can't spot the difference, really. Yeah. I am messing, of course. Manchester is glorious.
No, so what I mean is this, it's modern day issues, you know, what's going on in the Muslim community and kind of what turns out. But the story at the start is a young lad who wants to go pretty much party.
Yeah, just wants to, you know, be part of society and what's normal for a young lad his age. I think he's meant to be something like 23. He's a uni student, college student if you're American, but obviously we call it university here. Obviously he wants to fit in with the cool gang, wants to go to a party, will go to any length to go to this party, and that shows because he does some stuff that is pretty much out of character for him. Obviously, taking his dad's cab without consent, his family not being overly keen on him going to this party because obviously there'll be some drinking and, you know, that kind of behaviour, and they weren't really comfortable with him there. Takes his dad taxi whilst they're asleep, and you know, whilst you're watching it, I'd love to hear what Rory has to say on this, but when you're watching it, you just know, oh God, every single step of the way, because he's so naive. You know, from the moment he picks up that girl, and he should have thrown her out, he actually thought about, and you know, just every series of events after that, he's just sort of landing himself in deeper and deeper.
But he did throw out two people before that, Nin.
Yeah, but then he thought with his penis.
Exactly.
She's a gorgeous girl.
Yes.
You know, and that's just typical 23-year-old behaviour. But soon as it was happening, you just knew that, oh, God, this is not going to end well. This is not going to end well. And, you know, you just knew that something was going to happen. I didn't know what was going to happen because, obviously, guys, you recommended this show to me. You
didn't give me any spoilers.
No. Without any spoilers. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know if she was some dodgy psychopath who wanted to blow something up. I knew it was along them lines, because it was a Muslim family involved, and that's the current theme right now. But the fact of the matter was, yeah, he was in deep shit. And we'll obviously talk about the cultural issues much later, but from the offset, you just knew something was off.
I mean, Rory, I suppose it wasn't... she didn't want to die that night. She wanted to have some fun, you know?
Well, yeah, her idea of fun is not what his idea of fun was going to be anyway.
Mate, it was
but,
freaky,
you know,
right? With the games and the knives and what the fuck?
I did find that enchanting, though, you know? She was a very good cast.
You know, they went to like by the Brooklyn Bridge or you know, Lakeside by, you know, Riverside, you know, and that point you could kind of see why he was interested in her, and it felt very away from what he was like, because the clever thing in it, well, is his development from the off, really, because like Nina said, you think he's just some kind of clean living, lives at home, you know, typical student and, you know, Muslim or not, you know, that, you know, you're kind of typical of that character, that kind of American ilk, hardworking, you know, honest and innocent is the impression you get. Mm. That's the thing. That's the overriding feeling I felt in that first kind of 30 minutes, is this guy's never done anything like this before.
Bit of a dork.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, it belongs in the geek section on Anfield Index, but he's very much a kind of innocent bystander, and you just can't see that he would be involved in any of this. I think I, coming into it, knew he got sent to prison because I think they when they promoted it, it was more about the story and what had happened than you knowing that. It wasn't a secret. Do you know what I mean? I think they marketed it. So I knew he went to prison, but I didn't know for why. And I didn't know, Jesus, it was so intense. You know, that scene when he wakes up in the morning, wakes up downstairs and goes up to see her. That shocked me.
Because he's on the table, right? His head's down on the table.
Down on the table. Yeah, exactly. And he goes upstairs and the blood splatter and the sheet's covered in blood. And he didn't know what to do. And obviously they were getting up to all kinds and doing that crazy thing with a knife where you separate your fingers. And he stabbed her at one stage, did he?
Yeah, accidentally.
So obviously the knife is then... And he kept that on him, which was just crazy. And
that's why, though, because he stabbed her in the hand. He knew he stabbed her once, and he thought, I'm going to keep this. And then what follows is just
His series of events afterwards. Like, he ran out. Your DNA all over that room, you know.
And he couldn't get back in. Did he break the window?
The neighbor saw him. I mean, I know he was 23 and he absolutely panicked because none of us have ever been in that situation before. I can clarify that. I know.
Shut up.
And, you know, I just thought, you know what? Maybe it would have been so much more easy for him just to call the police.
Well, I mean, logically, yeah. You know, but I think maybe in his own mind, because he didn't know what had happened, maybe he thought he had done it. I think that's part of, I think you know that all the way through is, He can't remember what happened that night because he was so intoxicated and so many mixed of drugs and whatever else. It was just kind of, he didn't know what was going on in his head. But when you watch it back or even if you remember that first episode properly, it's the whole sequence of events is like, you know, he's going to be on film and the police approach him when he's in his taxi because he's got his light on and he doesn't know how to turn it off and he's not taking passengers, you know, that kind of thing. And he was kind of doomed from the outset. But yeah, it's such a great start to a story and it hooks you. I think it hooks you instantly, which is quite rare because a lot of series, and I know you're going on to do Westworld at some point, I think that's quite a slow burner for the first few episodes. It takes time. Whereas this, to me, is so compact.
Snappy, actually, isn't it?
It just smacks in the face in the first episode, and you can't not watch the next episode straight away, even if it is Christmas Eve at 3 a.m.
it was from the start he was doomed because he couldn't switch the light off from when he was just going to the party. Into your cab, you know, you can't even lock the doors. If you lock the doors, people don't get in, you know. He's not got anything right the whole time. The whole night was a write-off. It was not the night off. It was the fucking write off. You know, it was just absolutely everything went wrong. And then the police part where the key evidence there was a couple of key evidence points for both the prosecution and the defense was when he asked, is she dead? You know, because they end up going back and there's like, oh, we found a girl. And then they said, oh, there's a girl that's been stabbed. And he goes, oh, is she dead? So, you know, and they go, yeah. Well, no, they didn't tell him, did they, at that point? I don't think they're allowed to tell anyone.
No.
So the police don't tell him. But that was such a key moment. I mean, it was his face. Like, the fact that he didn't even, you know, it didn't clock to him that she'd just been stabbed. She's lying in blood and you're asking if she's dead, you twat. What are you doing? He was so gone at this point in his head. And the fear. Yeah.
If you've ever been in trouble at any instance in your life, and it could be as a kid when you've broken something, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, going to the headmaster worried. School.
Any kind of area where you've been in that sense of fear, just magnify that by 100 if you're in a situation like that, and you know your brain wouldn't work properly. Do you know what I mean? You know you wouldn't function properly. I think what's interesting when you look back at it and you know more about the story is he wasn't that innocent in the sense that, you know, he'd bought and sold drugs and he'd had violent episodes in the past and things that came out about him. So that image they painted of him, which is a little bit similar to Making a Murderer, actually, because it's very much told in the portrayal of it's on his side. Do you know what I mean? It's not on the prosecution. It's very much on the defense side.
I mean, just to counter that, I think the drugs and stuff, okay, understand. I mean, it's not...
He's a student. That's not a major thing.
And the other thing...
To make a little bit of money on the side, given the fact that he is from such a working-class family, I'm not condoning it in any way, shape or form, but given his age... where he's at university, college.
They may do anything to make money.
It's more the violence. But the violence was wrong as well.
He was a kid. I mean, like, I see where you're coming from, but I actually got really annoyed at that when they actually discovered information because they were actually really digging deep and, you know, they were kind of looking at his childhood and, you know, when he was a bit volatile and obviously those events took place like pretty much straight after 9/11.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. He explained it to Chandra that I was being bullied for 9/11. That was why I had to react. So he actually explained it to Chandra and said, you know, I was being bullied. That's why I reacted by pushing someone. It's kind of like pushing a door, basically, and someone fell down the stairs and he got done for it. So,
yeah, I'm just saying that I think there's more to the character that it lets on, obviously.
He's not
as fresh-faced and innocent as it portrays in that first half.
We all have a dark.
Exactly. Side, it's just very clever because it doesn't show any of that. It shows him as being like he's never been in trouble. And obviously that's not true.
But it's very clever
the way the prosecution gets into that. And obviously you see that dark side in prison. That's the development that is so interested about the series.
Before we get into the prison part, Nin, let's come to you then first. The police station is so intense still because there's like a few times where you think he's going to get away with it. Or at least leave the station.
Oh, yeah, when they just find, you know, obviously before they can vocalize him because it was way too late, so they were just going to let him go. And the female police officer just sort of pats him down one last time. And, you know, she's really thorough, really good. She's actually a good police woman, I'll give her credit.
Yeah, she was.
And they're talking about, the weapon that was used on her, the knife, and they were describing it. And as soon as they're describing it, you just see the shot of her pull it out of his inner pocket.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the chief, and she goes like this, and it's obviously covered in blood. And he just goes, I didn't do it. And oh God. And he just starts crying and he wants to run out and he wants his family. And you really feel sorry for him at that point. Really, really do feel sorry for him. But at the same time, he is literally swimming in murky waters right there. He is right in the lion's den. And it would have taken some miracle for him to get out. And had she not been so thorough with her search, he would have been able to walk out for the time being because they would have found his DNA and he would have been clocked again. Yeah.
She was the bully, in fact, in that bit. Like, you know, she was the receptionist type thing. She's supposed to be like, you know, they're normally the nice ones. But, you know, the copper, the box, what's his name? What was his name again? Dennis Box. Yeah.
He was
actually quite okay with him, quite decent, you know, to start with.
He was clever though.
Yeah, he was obviously clever. Very, very clever, but she was kind of like the bad cop. He was a good cop. And then, yeah, it was, Nin, you got it right. At the end of the day, when you look at it from that point of view, you feel sorry for him, but if you look at it from that point of view, she did her job. She was just doing her job, you know, and you do feel a bit bad, but Rory, his facial expressions in that scene are magnificent. He portrays it. He makes you feel real bad for Riz. You know, you feel bad for Riz.
Riz is amazing. I mean, we're going to talk about his transformation in the part, but Riz is just, he's an incredible actor and I'm really happy he's getting the kind of plaudits he deserves. But you know, he just looks so scared and he plays it so well. Apparently, in the whole of this, he stayed in accent the whole time. And you can tell, you know, because his American accent is incredible, to be honest. And
spent a month in Queens before the show.
Yeah, exactly. And he stayed in character then in nearly the entire time. And you can just sense it with him. He really is dedicated to getting it right. And I don't know, even if you see a close-up shot of before and after prison, it's just such a distinct change in look and personality. And yeah. That in that moment, you just think this guy's he's going to prison no matter what, is what you think. Do you know what I mean? No matter what happens, because he's got
guaranteed.
The murder weapon in your head. He's got the murder weapon on him, and he's been to scene of crime, and his DNA's everywhere, and he's got nothing, you know. So yeah, it's very interesting where it goes from there, and And it completely changes after that for me.
It does.
The character focus changes.
Welcome. At this point, you welcome in the knight in shining armor walks in, and in, absolutely with the itches galore, itchy scratchy man. Oh my God, what a character this guy is in this, and he nails it. Absolutely nails it. A little bit of background. This guy was in, John Turturro is how I think you say his name. He was in Transformers, and apparently he has been offered movie after movie after movie after movie, and he rejects them all and directs his own little movies and shit, and basically just really is picky with his stuff. And
he's an artist.
Fantastic, mate.
He's done some terrible stuff over the year, though.
Oh,
I'll
because
honest.
He just does it. He wants to be in control.
Yeah, I know. He's a really funny actor because he's been in 100 films or acting roles. And he's 59. He's not young. In and amongst there, he's done some really stellar films. And like you said, he's kind of written and directed kind of 8 or 9 films, and he's doing some more. But he has kind of shied away from the Hollywood when he's been offered incredible parts. I think this is almost finally his deserving, you know. I mean, he's been nominated for, has he been up for an Emmy or is it Golden Globe?
Yep,
yeah,
both of them.
And he's up against Riz in the same category, exactly. Which is quite frustrating. And obviously this series is up as well for best series. And yeah, I mean, it couldn't be more deserved. I don't think he's going to win, sadly, but he's just incredible
I think the show, his character in the show mimics his real life a little bit. But anyway, we'll get there. Nin, so he walks in. What were your first impressions of John Stone, is it?
John Stone, yeah, how can you forget that name? It sounds almost like a footballer that plays for Man City. Almost.
He's not as bad as him, though, was he? Well, maybe. Actually, go on then. Tell me about John Stone. What did you think?
When I initially saw him, I just thought he was a bit of
a bum.
A cowboy equivalent of an attorney, especially with his little business cards, no fee till you're free or whatever, the little cheesy tagline. And he was all over the subways. And I loved the fact that he rolls up in his little Jesus sandals and his long Mac, his grey Mac. He looked very sort of 1980s New Yorker, like that's how they all dressed in the films. And then you look down, he's got these big sodding Jesus sandals on, and his feet are in such a bad state, real bad eczema from what it looks like. And I mean, I'm sure you're going to talk about character development, but he really grows in. And I love the fact that the first thing he always says is he always talks about his feet. Like he'll say, I know, but it's eczema. Or, you know, he knows people are looking at them, and he's really conscious of them. And it's his sort of, if you will, Achilles heel, bad pun, I know. You know, it really affects him. And you see it throughout the whole, the way he's kind of going to all
That's
these
his battle, isn't it?
Different, to all these different clinics, trying to get the suitable treatment for him. And every night he's moisturizing and he's pampering his feet and trying to make them better. And the chopstick on the subway. And
it
was so gross, but so realistic, you know? It was just so good. And at parts, obviously, you'll talk, obviously, he represents him as his lawyer. Obviously, he sounds too good to be true when he takes it. But what I loved was he took on, Riz Khan. I think his character's called Nasir Khan. Nasir Khan. He's willing to take him on because he thinks he's just stabbed someone, not murdered them. And soon as that information becomes, apparent to him that it's a murder, homicide, he looks like a fish out of water.
Rory, he just lost it at that point. Oh, okay. I want to charge a bit more for this one.
Yeah, he's just brilliantly portrayed. But I think the thing with him walking around in the sandals is the fact it's winter and he's walking around in these things. And
oh, and he puts
bags on them. Of course,
they're
going to draw
it. Oh my God.
You've got to feel for him. I mean, the moment he wears shoes is probably the happiest moment of the whole series. And the thing is, the funny thing is with this, is that they're almost like two lead characters, to be honest, because it almost becomes more about his story than it does about Riz, which is kind of crazy because Riz is the one in jail, Riz is the one going through the murder trial and all the rest of it. But it's his kind of emergence as a, I don't know, he's been looking after degenerates and lowlives, and he's got more than an element of Better Call Saul about him, if you've seen Breaking Bad. Mm. He's got that kind of cowboy cavalier approach, as a, and he's never represented anyone for anything other than gang violence or,
I don't know if you picked up on the tidbit while watching the show either, that when he's asking for all that money, he actually only turned over 30 grand the year before. So whatever he got, like, in the end, he gets 30 grand to help him out, you know, at the end, to help out Chandra. And that was actually his whole year's taking from the year before.
Exactly. So basically, he's representing people for $200 a time or whatever. You know? It's so just, very he didn't know time. How to react to that. Oh, no, he's the smallest of small time, isn't he? That's the thing. He's just represented the lowest of the low. And he's known for that.
So he's a when freelance they realize, lawyer, isn't he?
Yeah. When they realise he's taking on the big case, they're like, nah, you're not doing that. And he almost wants to back out of it. But actually, I think he sees something in Riz, and I think it brings something out in him that maybe he didn't ever knew he had, kind of courage. He's a wonderfully portrayed character, and he thoroughly deserves his nomination. Hopefully he will get awards for his performance, because he was just incredible.
Yeah, and then he saw something in Nasser, definitely, in his eyes. I think that's one of the things with the Riz Ahmed, is the acting. I don't know if you noticed, but from his eyes in this show. Because Nas doesn't say much in this series.
Having said that, when he first went to speak to him and he actually found out it was actually murder and not him stabbing up some girl... Much more fatal than what he initially anticipated. And he goes, let me tell you my side of the story, because I don't want to know. Because in his head, it's still like, you're in for murder, and I really don't want to know the facts. So I think there was an element of doubt to begin with.
Oh, God, there would be.
And he just did not want to know. And even from till the very end, he never asked him for his version of events. He never asked him.
No, until it came out, until whatever was displayed in court, you know?
Yeah.
And also, there was the innocence. I think the innocence was enough for him. He didn't want to ruin that initial gut feeling of what he got from seeing Nasser Khan, the man, the boy. He saw him for who he was at that point, and he goes, I can't believe he'd, you know, in your head, you can't believe he'd do something like that. So, you know what? I don't want to be swayed. Let me try. And also, it's a meal ticket, right, for him.
And you know what I loved about it as well was every time these shady stories from his past were coming out, he'd be so disappointed.
Mm.
He'd be like a disappointed father.
Yeah.
And he'd go into prison and he'd absolutely grill his ass.
It
wasn't like an attorney client sort of grilling. It was almost like a caring parent or, you know, a caring person. You know, somebody that actually gives a shit about you. And that might be because he is such an amateur lawyer and he's never been in this situation before. But you got a sense of warmth from him, which you didn't get from, you know, the other female attorney that he had, who was obviously a big corporate lawyer.
I think it was Alison Crowe.
Mm.
Yeah, but before we move on with the story into what happens in the jail and all that, I want to move on to one other part of the plot, which was happening at the same time. And we'll come back to the family as well, Nin, because I know you want to speak about that side of things. But it's the police and the prosecution. So Helen Weiss, is it? Is that how you would say it?
Yep. Yes.
The district attorney. And then obviously Dennis Box. Basically, these two, how they're portrayed, obviously, what they're trying to do, what they're getting. And I think this will feed into, Nin, what you were saying as well, with your social side of things. But they're kind of, it's kind of open case for them. I mean, Dennis Box does try in the end, and we'll get there. That's one of the evolution parts of his character. But I guess he always has the doubt. He's always got the doubt the other way. There's something not right about this, you know.
Which is why they charged him initially.
Yeah, but Helen, she just wants him done. Shut case, anything. I mean, she tries to even manipulate a bloody medical examiner at one point. She is just hardcore want to win here. And just get it out the way. And for me, what it brought forward was very similar to Making a Murderer. That really, this show wasn't about...
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't really about Nasser, as in him. It was really about how there's a failure in the system, in the States.
Well, Dax, isn't there a really high percentage of people who get... who get sent down or who are charged with crime in America, the high percentage are actually not guilty.
Hmm. Yeah. And
I think that was a clear indication of that stat, because All they saw was the evidence, or, you know, pieced up evidence that kind of pointed, everything pointed towards Nadia. It kind of made their life a lot easier. You've got to think about it. They've got so, you know, they're in New York City. Crime happens by the minute, every minute. They just want to get things done as quick as they can. Why bother looking? I know it's negligent. I know it frustrates the life at you. I know everyone's right to equal trial and, you know, a fair trial. And he certainly wasn't given that with the way they were just trying to manipulate facts and such things. But it's sad, but it is a sorry indictment of their law in general.
Rory, would you agree with that? I mean, I just said that. I know I just said something there. It's not about, it was about Nasir Khan. It was about him. But what I mean is the real meat in the end is the big flaw. There's a big, big flaw. Like, it very, very much mimics Making a Murderer, right?
It does. Yeah. It's definitely taken a lot of the elements of Making a Murderer.
This was made, well, I think actually they were being made at the same time and not aired because this took four years.
I mean, it doesn't need to be as such, you know, it does feel like it, but I think it's just a small sample of what is a major issue in the States with the judicial system, you know, and yeah, it does very much feel like they've got an open and closed case and they don't have, he doesn't admit to it, so he, you know, there's always that element of doubt, but they're thinking he just doesn't admit to it because he can't remember because he was intoxicated, and it's not about that, you know, it's he genuinely doesn't know if he's done it or not, and it's so frustrating that they're so quick to just throw the book at him when as an audience you're there going, well, has he definitely done it? Are you not looking at other possibilities, and are you not looking at potential other candidates to it, because there's more to the case than that. And Box is more thorough than she is, Vice is, but he's still quite quick to want to get it all wrapped up. He's due retirement, isn't it? You know, and it's kind of his last case. And yeah, there are some massive failings in lots of parts of America, let's be honest. There's a lot of other good things. I'm not judging the whole country on negatives, but yeah, this is one of the elements that you'll see a lot more of these series. And I haven't watched the O.J. Simpson thing from this year, but I think that's
I really want to watch that as well.
I think that's supposed to sweep a lot of the nominations and a lot of the awards at the ceremonies this year.
I want to watch that. That looks really good. And it's got David Schwimmer in a different role, hasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. From Friends. I need to watch it, so I'll set that out. But
Ross? I might have to do a Friends episode.
Friends will last hours. I don't know how you'll do Friends, but you know, it's going to be great if you do it. Yeah.
I will do it, definitely. Give me an idea there. But okay, so any thoughts on the performances, really, of Dennis Box and Helen Weiss?
I thought Box was good. I thought Box was really good.
He's good, isn't he? He's a good actor as well. And
he's a good actor, and he plays a really good detective. Do you know what I mean? He does have that kind of face. For and he just has that great kind of... He's got that kind of edge to him. Do you know what I mean? That kind of... He will do things that are a little bit sneaky just to kind of get it done, as a lot of detectives would do. But equally, he's got that kind of inner... intuition, you know, that tells him something that's not quite right, and ultimately he's quite important to the end of the story, or he's extremely important.
Massively. And you know what, Nin, before we get to the family, because what happens before we get to the family is that Nasir is taken to jail, and you know what, I remember this so vividly, because the entire episode, I think it was the second one, is pretty much in slow motion taking him through the process of going to jail, and oh man, it's just horrific to watch, because you're just like, I don't think he's done this.
Have you seen who he's in with as well? Have you seen the size?
Oh my god,
he's like a little teeny weed pole.
Yeah, but don't you think, Nin, that it's an amazing episode because of just how it's shot in terms of
looks so out of place.
Oh, he looks out of place, but it's just brutal. Yeah. Brutal.
And he's like, watch, and every time he looks up or he makes eye contact, and what the fuck are you looking at? You know, just that aggressive, intimidating men in his face, where to the point where he can't look and he's got nowhere to look down. But if he looks down, then he looks like a coward, or he looks like he's going to shit the bed. You know, he just couldn't win. It was really hard. And I loved the fact that when they were all getting searched up, and the guy had something stashed up his ass and they found it and he just looked mortified. It was just brilliant. It was just so funny.
And it's massive because of what happens later in the show. He's mortified at that point, but then later in the show, what happens to him and what he has to do to get what he wants. Unbelievable. We'll get there in the plot. But, I mean, Rory, you could feel the terror from his face, just from emotions. And I thought it was magnificent.
He had no idea what he was
getting into.
I mean, you've seen it before. It almost had similarities to me with Shawshank.
Mm.
Oh, you two, here we go. Let's start Shawshank.
All right.
Like when they're all looking in at them, like the predators, like who's going to cry first when they're all...
It's got that kind of American prison feel to it. And, it's certainly got that element of that first night in prison, that fear you'd feel, that knowing that you're not going to be back with your family or your loved ones or anyone for potentially most of your life, you know. And it's not captured very often, and it's not captured extremely well very often, and when it is and you see that kind of emotion, I think you just get a sense of this is his life changed now. And I didn't know really where it was going to go from there as a series. I think you're three or four episodes in and you almost think the case is closed and that's going to be the end of it. And I think I probably didn't even know how many parts it was when I first looked from the episodes. And you think, it's going to get sewn up and it's going to be a three-part kind of drama. Do you know what I mean? And you're not going to see the ramifications of what goes on. And then it just completely changes when he gets to prison, because he changes completely when he gets to prison. And,
well, not straight away. Not straight away.
Well, pretty quickly.
Took him a couple of episodes, which is pretty much half this season. Can't they?
Yeah.
I know what you mean.
It does pick up quickly.
Timeline. They move. Timeline wise, it goes. It's quick. Obviously, they just show a lot of
all the initial episodes. Once he goes to prison, are really about the legalities, isn't it? It's about setting up the court case. It's about setting up his representation.
Yeah.
About
Dennis
the fights
Box
that go on between
to get
them.
More on him. They're trying. The prosecution trying to get more on him, and then this point then it switches into a two arc show where it goes from in jail and outside of jail, and then this is where you get the family negotiating with absolutely no power at all. The cab is stuck, you know, the dad is absolutely stuck for cash, he can't do anything, the family's got no negotiating power, John Stone wants shitloads of dosh. What a horrible situation.
Can I just say, you know, what I loved when he went into prison was you were equally interested in what's going in prison. How's he coping? How's he going to evolve? Or how does he evolve? How does he survive? And what's going on the out? What are they doing to get him off the hook? You know, you're really interested in that. And for that reason alone, it kind of reminded me of Prison Break season one, where the inside was equally as interesting as what was going on the out. You know, I drew a lot of comparisons in that sense. And some of the inmates kind of reminded me of inmates in Prison Break as well, if that makes sense. But yeah, his family, completely screwed over at this point, looked kind of lifeless, you know. They were living, but only just. They were like walking around like zombies, kind of in disbelief, shock, kind of like they were going to wake up from a terrible nightmare. And also you kind of saw them being, you know, massively alienated within their, you know, in their community, and, you know, people kind of looking down at them. And I take little things, and, you know, obviously I'm a Muslim. You know, this was meant to be a representation of a Muslim family. And the thing that I took a lot from was how calm they were in the entire situation. Like, you never saw his mum and dad really lose their shit or not have faith in their boy. The mother started losing it a little in court when she saw graphic images of the girl. But I absolutely love that. I love the fact that they were willing to do everything and anything for him. And, it was really hard because they were a working class family and their backs were really up against it. And for me, one of the saddest things I saw, Gags, you know, you're an Asian too, but that scene when, first of all, Chandra, the lead lawyer on his case, orders some food and his dad's the delivery guy. Mm. You know, that really, you know, that was just probably so degrading for him. His mother becomes a cleaner just to make ends meet, just to, you know, just to try funding, just trying to help. But for me, the saddest thing was when they actually go into a shop and she's selling off her jewellery.
Yeah, they're doing everything they can to get, and this is what the kind of Asian feel, the Asian community part comes out here, because you do see this happen in our families, and you do see this happen where we are, that if when shit, you know, hits the fan,
no, you're in deep shit if you're having to sell your gold as an Asian. Yeah. It's like, to me, you're in dire straits.
Yeah, because no one sells their gold. Gold's an investment people keep in hand on down generations in our families, and if you've got to a point where you're selling gold, shit, yeah, you're up shit's creek, pretty much.
Yeah.
And what are the social type of stuff? Because it's a good point here to get anything else out, what you wanted to speak about here.
You know what, Emma? Obviously, you were speaking about the first episode, and I completely forgot to miss this, but as they were walking back to her apartment, he got racially abused by another kind of minority. It was two black lads.
Yeah.
And I found that really interesting. Not in a bad way, not in a good way. It was really interesting, the fact that another minority was attacking, say, another minority, if you will. Because for so long, or stereotypically, it's always the white Caucasian attacking and calling them Arabs or terrorists or whatever. I thought it was really interesting that, you know, it was another minority group and the racism was coming from another minority group. I also, when obviously their community was being attacked because of this, there's a lot of hate crime going on because of what Nazir allegedly did. Cabbies were getting beaten up, and you know, it was always on the front page. And what I found, this summarizes it in England as well. It was Sikh cabbies getting battered. So there was just so much ignorance amongst these people attacking these people that they couldn't even like differentiate between faith, that they were just going out.
That put more pressure on the prosecution to get something done.
Yeah, as quick as possible. And obviously, when the mosque got vandalised, and you know that lady who walked past with her full face covered says to her dad in Urdu, "Are you happy now?" Like it's his fault. You know, the family really had to take a lot of the flak for what he allegedly did. And you know, I know they kept saying, and another thing as well, they kept going on about, it's if it helps, he's a Muslim too. You know, when obviously they had him on profile, and you know they were going to prosecute him, or you know they were going to charge him. And then they kept saying, it's not about his religion. It's not about his religion. But then they were trying to find dirt on him, like whether he's got links to Al-Qaeda and stuff. And I was like, well, it clearly is.
Massive, massive point. You know, that was another great part, actually, that they were trying to do.
If you know, like a white American committed murder, do you look for links for right-wing Nazi parties that he might be linked to, or KKK? Probably not.
No, never. Never. I mean, what was the good thing, I think, what you're trying to say, is that this show was able to portray what an Asian family goes through really well, to the T, in that situation, which is what I think you're trying to say. And I think that was very, very good. I think that's one of the things why.
And I also like the fact that the racist element wasn't from generic two white dudes.
Yeah.
It was two black dudes. And I found that quite refreshing in a strange way.
Yeah. It was
so obvious. Yeah.
Rory, this is quite an interesting. I don't know what you felt about this angle that we brought up here, or if you noticed it at all throughout the show.
Oh, completely. No, completely. I mean, it is very much. It's nice in a lot of ways. It's not in the sense that what they're going through and what they're struggling with, but it's nice that story is getting told at the same instance, because not many dramas or films will often show the angle of the family and what they go through and what they're left with. And ultimately kind of what it shapes for their now and their future, because, you know, I know we're going to go on towards the end and stuff, but their lives are impacted, and not just in the now, but for their whole life is now changed. Do you know what I mean? And, innocent or not, their lives are changed, and it shows really what effect that can have on a family. And I completely, you know, echo what Nina said, and what you said is it does show the misrepresentation of kind of Muslim families and the kind of racist and issues that go on in the States, in this country. You know, it's been a tough year for a lot of those elements. And this series did encapsulate a lot of the feelings that have happened in 2016 as a whole. I think it probably couldn't have been released in a better year, if I'm perfectly honest. And
you're right.
Yeah, I just think it's kind of refreshing in lots of ways that it told their story, but it's really heartbreaking at the same instance, because, you know, as a dad, you know, imagine your kid going through that, or an auntie, or a, you know, whatever you are in relation to family member. If you imagine what would happen, your lives would just get ripped apart, and you'd do anything to try and fund their release until, you know, the mum starts having doubts and various elements of it. And it's just so, yeah, the emotion you see through them is almost as important as anything that Nazir or anyone else goes through, because they're having to live with the consequences of what's happened, so on a day-to-day basis. So, yeah, it's really powerful stuff.
I mean, they
both acted it really well.
They become key. I think it's Trevor, isn't it? One of them is Trevor, who Helen just lets go. They just let him go. Like, that was the other thing from the prosecution, like from when they just let him go. They had him, and he just got out of it and went, and didn't even mention nothing about Dwayne Reed, which is bloody hilarious, by the way. If you're from America or you've been to America, I've been to America so much, I've been to New York so many times, Dwayne Reed is like the local store. And when they, I mean, if Auntie, my wife, was watching it with me, she would have laughed, because we used to just laugh at the name all the time, Dwayne Reed. So when this guy is actually called Dwayne Reed, piss myself laughing. Such a brilliant little twist in there. But anyway, let's go back. So let's go now. Obviously, we'll come back to Trevor and Dwayne later, but let's go straight into jail now, because that's the we've spent a lot of time discussing the pre. Let's go straight into the jail scenes then, Rory. Let's start with you. I mean, it gets heavy straight away for him, doesn't he? Once he says no to oh God, I've forgotten his name.
Peter.
No, the big one, the main man.
The main man is
Freddy.
Freddy the boxer, that's him. Yeah. Yeah. So as soon as he says no to him...
They call him the king, don't they? So you always kind of forget his name.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was
rough. As soon as he says
rough.
No, it's almost like, yeah, this is what's going to happen. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't know. He's getting so kind of mixed advice from other people, isn't he? He just doesn't know what to do within prison and how to react. And, yeah, it's quite amazing, that kind of turn of events where he goes from completely denying being his bitch and you know, dealing with the elements that come along with prison life, to being really encapsulated, to being his right-hand man almost. And his transformation is just insane. I mean, every time the lawyer goes back to visit him, he's like, you're not making this an easy case for me. Do you know what I mean? You're becoming every picture they're trying to paint of you, you know, shaving your head and getting it. Is it knuckles he gets tattooed, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think
which
so.
Which is just, and he just looks every inch the man that belongs in prison, really. But he's doing that to survive and to fit in. And he's showing what prison life is like for a young man who's goes in without money. Do you know what I mean? He doesn't have anything to bribe anyone off with. He only has things to offer when he starts smuggling drugs and getting in with a gang and doing
what Freddie ultimately says. But before that, though, he's declined a massive plea bargain, hasn't he? And they say, let's agree to, you know, lesser charge of manslaughter, 15-year sentence. And they basically, you know, the beautiful bit about this was where Chandra just is now obviously representing him. Yeah. And she just says, you know, if you did it, take the plea bargain. And if you didn't do it, don't take it. And it was just, she said it as simple as that to him, you know, as a caring person. Obviously, everyone had a doubt. She did too. But she just said, looked him in the eye and just said, if you did it, take it. You're not going to get a better deal than that. And if you didn't do it, don't. And he just says no. And the shock on everyone's face when he says no. It's like, okay, I knew he was going to do that, kind of. The
no, I know.
Obviously, it was episode 4, so we kind of knew that was going to happen, because there's 4 more to go. So he wasn't exactly going to get on into jail. But yeah, I mean, Nin, what did you... I mean, Rory's just gone through, you know, how the transformation and stuff. And I mean, the scenes of setting his bed on fire and stuff, it's just nuts, isn't it?
Yeah, again, it was because of the crime, you know. It was
all
down to his crime. You know, it was nothing to do with how he looked. It was because they saw him as a bit of a soft pushover. And when they all went into that the court together, and they found out what he's going to get, you know, what apparently the charges were against him, and they all went, damn, looking at each other like, how is this guy able to kill anyone? And then they obviously find out it's a girl, and I think he raped someone. I think that's what really kind of got their backs up about him. And you know, Yeah, he literally went to the bathroom and he come back and his bed's on fire. And if he'd not timed that to a T, it would have been him in bed on fire, essentially, you know. And it was just kind of a sign, like, watch your back. And you really felt for him. And it was a clear indication that this dude needs protection. And he still resisted it up until, obviously, that guy who pretends to be his friend. And obviously he's in because he tried killing the murderer of his niece, but didn't get that quite right and killed someone else and was in prison. And he kind of saw that his revenge for her was taking it out on Nas. And obviously he tried scalding him with a baby oil.
Yeah.
And it was only after that, you know, he was deceived because that guy looked like his genuine friend. He really did.
Mm. It was only then. Big twist that was.
Yeah, massive twist. I did not see that coming, I'm not going to lie. And I always kind of knew that, you know, Freddy was probably his best ally, and I'm glad he kind of took it. And after that, it was pretty much smooth sailing for him. And his character really developed from that point on because, you know, he was in with the cool gang. He was kind of untouchable.
But didn't you get the feeling that Riz was worried that obviously he was going to be used as a bit of a toy?
I thought that. I thought, is he, you know, is
that's
he
why he wasn't going to go with...
Yeah, of course, absolutely. Because I don't know if you remember that... the scene on his first day at prison, someone goes, can I, cause obviously I think he had a card, a food card, where obviously he could get halal food. And this big beefy dude said, can I use your card? My wife can put money in my account. We'll pay you back, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, yeah, sure. And he just gave it. And the guy who was supposed to be his friend, I can't remember his name, was like, you fucking pushover. They're going to do that to you every single day for the rest of your life in here. You know, he was so weak and vulnerable that he actually needed that protection.
I mean, then you move into... the disgusting scenes of
going,
was it someone's mother who pulls it out of her arm?
It was someone's mother and he had to swallow it, yeah.
I mean, you look at that and you just put yourself in the situation and think, this young lad who hasn't done this crime is now having to do this to get something, you know,
No money in prison, and protection, that's what you're
and the
for.
Gag, and he was gagging on it, and he couldn't keep it down. And like you said, Rory, the when it goes forward, he's doing it like a perfectionist.
Oh, I know. He becomes. And the thing is, he was going, like, Riz was going to the gym after takes till what hours in the morning to bulk up at that point during shooting. Because he obviously puts on a lot of muscle, shaves his head, he changes his whole persona. Do you know what I mean? He completely changes. The guy that went in is not the guy that's come out, and that's what you find. There's a transformation in his personality, and he starts taking drugs, which ultimately is a huge thing for him because he's addicted, and it completely shapes his personality and starts to really derail a lot of things and starts to make him become hard to represent. I think that's what you find from the legal standpoint. You know, the lawyer says to him when he goes to visit him that, I know what you've got to do, son, I think he says. I understand what you're doing. But just, you know, remember we're trying to help you here, kind of thing. You know, it's quite powerful because, yeah, as Nina said before, he's almost like a father figure in lots of ways. And that's hurtful for him, and he doesn't want to see Riz or Nazir going through that. And yeah, it's quite amazing actually, the transformation. And I mean, if you listen to Riz is so charismatic, and in this obviously he's very downplayed and not much emotion, and it's so opposite to his personality in real life. And he is quite funny because he says all he gets offered in Hollywood is the parts of terrorists, and he has such a joke about this, which. It's quite sad in reality, but he's kind of becoming quite an iconic actor for a community. And he's shown that you can do parts like this, and then you can do Star Wars, and you can do his comedy and his other elements. And actually, he's becoming really prominent. And yeah, I think it's just, I think he's done a lot in the last year. And I think I'm just proud of him being a British actor, but I think as a British Muslim actor, he's obviously doing things in Hollywood that a lot of men haven't done before, really. So, yeah.
I agree. I'll cover it.
Really big part for him.
I'll cover it more on the Star Wars review one day, but seeing that a British Muslim, and he sounding like just one of a British Muslim in Rogue One just was surreal for me, and such a proud moment, like being someone who born and brought up in this country. Anyway, back to the Night of Nins. So the trial continues. Basically, every fucking card is now stacked against him. They've brought in the medical examiner who displays results in a dodgy manner as well. You know, they've done pretty much. They've gone to about, you know, this pushing the student downstairs, what Rory talked about, and the drugs. They've done everything now. And, you know, here comes the alternate angle, the stepdad. You know, this is where, you know, I think his name was Don. I mean, this was an interesting development, wasn't it, for when you're watching?
It was actually John Stones that started dabbling.
Yes,
with
he did, and he was trying to get it to
he
him.
He saw him
it?
At the funeral, didn't he? Yeah, that's why
and
it triggered
he had a fight with the accountant, and he wanted to know what the fight was all about. And then obviously, like, digging deeper, and he had a thing for the older, lonely female who was quite well off, shall we say?
Yeah.
You know, he had a history of that, and you know. And then obviously he got speaking to their family accountant or financial advisor, whatever you want to call him. And he was very, very very much telling the story that this stepdad, you know, wanted the house. And the girl, what was the girl's name? Was it Alison?
Andrea,
that's it. Andrea said, over my dead body. And, you know, it just seemed too much of a fit. You know, he had the biggest motive.
It was only hours before as well.
Yeah, he had the biggest motive to kill her. And also he had, he's been charged in the past for assaulting women, his ex-wives, Andrea's mum being one of them. And, you know, obviously he gets wind, and John Stone being John Stone starts, going to his gym and tries finding out more info about him, because, you know, you're not going to spot John Stone at a big, beefy meathead gym, are you? He's not going to stick out like a sore thumb in any way, shape or form. And, and of course, you know, he threatens him and, obviously then puts him to the stands. Very good stuff. For me, he looked nailed on to have done it. I'm sure we're going to get to that later.
Yeah, we will. I mean, Rory, your thoughts on this part of the show? It was very, very interesting, and obviously this is where you kind of start thinking a bit more about Riz and saying, yeah, we were right about this, maybe.
Yeah, no, completely. And I think, you know, that there has to be more that, you know, more to it. Do you know what I mean? There's background to the character. You know, you meet the girl and you know nothing about her. You know, a house. I think, does she talk a little bit about a mum, maybe, that she was left the house? I can't remember specifically.
But you don't know she's loaded. You just think she's living
there,
exactly, or whatever, you know.
Exactly.
But it comes
out
she's
fucking
loaded. You
have no concept, really, of anything about her. So, you know, it's great that he's actually being a lawyer, you know, when he's doing what lawyers should do. Well, he's doing what police should do, really. Do you know what I mean? And he's finding evidence. He's finding things. And, yeah, the stepdad's a funny one, because he's almost too obvious in a lot of ways. Like, shows always like to throw up a, oh, it's probably going to be him kind of character, when ultimately it probably wasn't. But he's an interesting character development. And when you're starting to doubt Riz a little bit, and you have your moments where you are starting to doubt it, because you just don't know if he's done it or not. He doesn't know. He's not admitting to it. Then it kind of just throws it on its head a little bit, and then you start to, you know, it's a very clever series, because you just start to second guess your own thought process, and that's very good in what is an 8-part series.
Exactly.
You go back and forth quite a few times.
It was fast moving. In fact, they've packed in every show with you know, you can't miss every single episode, you know?
All episodes are there to be, you have to watch them all. Yeah,
exactly, like Nin did in one go sometimes. No, please, don't be so crazy. But basically, Nin, so let's try and wrap the plot up, because we've gone so long talking about this. Basically, what happens now is, in jail, he's actually bloody helped Freddy to kill someone. I know he doesn't actually help him, but he kind of does, to get a new, you know, card or whatever he's got. Oh, no, new asthma inhaler. and kind of distracts everyone while he goes and kills someone, yeah? But
the guy deserved it.
Of course. Nin, it doesn't matter if you deserve it or not. You don't kill people, for fuck's sake. Like, what the hell? Did you just say that? You weirdo, you deserve
it. It's prison. You got to do what you got to do to survive. And he threatened him as well in the showers. Do you remember? Because obviously he was making that young, innocent, helpless boy, whose mother it was, do stuff that he didn't want to do against his will. And that boy killed himself, and that was probably on his conscience. That another thing reminded me of Prison Break, because a very, very similar situation happened.
Yeah, there's loads. During all that time, you get Riz beating someone up as well, and it really shows the violent
side. That's the guy who scolded him.
Yeah, yeah. He just showed the violent side of Riz, of Nasser Khan coming through, and really just... That was where the evolution, what Rory's been talking about, comes through. But then, obviously, at the same time, Chandra's fucking everything up on the other side because...
Oh, you know what? Can I just...
Go on. You go and rant. You rant about this to me as well.
No, if he was naive in the beginning, she was so naive as an Eterni. Don't get me wrong. She obviously cared about him, but being romantically linked with your client, bringing him dope, how old was she?
I think she was doing that to get a mistrial, but failed. I really do. I think she was trying to get it a mistrial, and then the judge, they caught onto it and said, nope, John Stone can take over instead. And, like, she got sacked as well.
It was the weakest part of the story, actually. I didn't think they needed to put that in there, but, it was quite disappointing.
But before she gets sacked, Nick...
That's not even a mystery. You do realise what she did, it's not even, like, she jeopardized her own career.
I think
she was naive, and that's what really frustrated me. And the thing that really hurts me, I can pardon all that, but you know what really pissed me off about the whole situation? When she tried being Big Balls Marta and put into the stand. I'm not being funny. I am no lawyer. I've never been to court, touch wood, and long may that continue. but all I'm saying is I've watched The Time to Kill with Samuel L. Jackson. You don't put someone that's up for murder in that box. Yeah. Especially against that dragon woman who fucking ate her for breakfast.
She ate him? She asked him.
Yeah, but as a result of her naivety, and I love the fact when John Stones turns around and says to her, you've just cost him his life.
Yeah. It was harsh. I mean, Rory, I don't know what you felt about. Nina felt really strongly about that, obviously. but what did you feel about that scene?
I just think as long as Nina keeps that restraining order against Jurgen Klopp, she's not going to go to prison anytime soon. It might happen one day or another. But
nice.
She made a lot of mistakes. She was clearly an innocent kind of young legal defendant. She had not enough experience. And she wasn't the right person to represent him, and she pretty much jeopardized his life, by her actions.
Even the lowly John Stone told him not to do that.
Well, I think you're underplaying John Stone a little bit.
Hey, all just called him a bum at the start. Come on.
He is at the start, but I think you see
his. He becomes a butterfly.
Well, a little bit of that. I think you see the fact that actually he's a very good legal defender. He understands the process. He's just never really had the confidence.
Or the chance, maybe,
and somewhat his feet have kind of held him back a little bit.
This episode is when his feet are all right,
Like I said earlier, proudest moment is when he wears his shoes. And, and every time he goes into court, the security guy, when he's taking off all this, he's got a load of bag and all the stuff in it, and he's taking off his shoes and all this kind of stuff. And they're all looking at him in disdain and disgust. And the poor guy goes through hell with all these ridiculous ointments and creams and baths and stuff. And to wear the shoes and to be quite proud.
Cling film was terrible. What an idiot.
Cling film. The guy had to go through makeup for 2 hours a day to get his feet to look like that, It is just insane. But
Can I just say something about that whole eczema thing? I love the fact that he's part of a support group as well. It added another layer to his character.
Of course it did.
Can I mention
No one's even talking about the cat.
Mention the cat, and then I'll just feed off the topic.
Yeah, the cat almost is the kind of happy moment in the end, because the guy's not having the greatest time of things. He thinks his feet are cured, and they're not. And, the cat is the kind of a redemption element at the end where he's like, well, fuck it, my life's shit. I might as well just keep the cat, you know, because that's the thing that makes him happy. And it's really nice and sweet. And, you know, he's the kind of, he's the character that comes out of it. And you know, you feel a bit for him, and he's got that kind of weird relationship with, it's kind of a prostitute thing going on in there. And he's got a son that he doesn't see anymore, really. And his character development is quite incredible. And the cat kind of, at the end, is quite crucial.
He's got impotence problem, everything. There's loads of shit going on with John Stone. There's loads of problems.
He's not a healthy man, is he? Let's be honest.
And basically, did you want to say something about the cat facing in?
I love the interaction he had with the cat. He had an allergy and he just locked in his room. He'd empty the cat litter and then throw in the food. It was just with a mask on and everything. Yeah, throwing the toys. And I love that when he was actually out shopping, buying cat toys and little, little play mice things. I'm a cat owner, and I love the fact that despite him having an allergy, he still wanted to give it a home and a shelter. Like, that was the warm side of John Stone.
Human side, definitely. And going into the other part, it just, there was a mimicking arc, really, of how his feet got better, stuff for Naz was getting better, and then as soon as he was about to go on the stand, His stuff went to shit as well. And they kind of had a really, it's quite interesting how the storyline went like that. They kind of had a symmetrical kind of thing going on. And, obviously once that happened, you kind of thought, once Naz was on that, standing, you kind of thought, that's it now. Game's over, innit? He's done. There's no way
into
this.
Because the district attorney just asked him, she pressed him so much to the point where from him saying, I didn't do it all the way through, he actually said, I don't know.
That's the worst thing you can say.
And then they went to the defense, and they went to Chandra, and they went, anything else? And she's about to cry. Her voice is shaking. You could see her holding back the tears, and she goes, the defense rests.
Idiot.
She knew she booked herself.
She did. And I mean, the saving grace of everything, unless I've missed something here, guys, if you want to talk about it, is then John Stone, his closing speech is just magnificent, isn't it?
Oh, it's incredible.
Absolutely nails it. Puts it right in there to put the doubt in your head.
It's the very interesting talk about the knife set. You know, that's one of parts of the evidence, which is quite crucial, that was it that knife? Do you know what I mean? And it's he puts representation of doubt into the jury, which is the important thing in all of it. And yeah, I think isn't it Box that eventually tries to throw the trial because of the tape? Because it's Freddie that sends the tape, isn't it? Of him kissing. Yeah. And he tries because then Box is the one that ultimately believes him. Do you know what I mean? And it's
but then Box tries to convince Helen as well in a way, and she's having none of it. But I think then when the verdict, I mean, Nin, did you want to say anything about the John's speech?
No, John's speech was amazing. What I loved was Freddie, the way he was kind of, don't go in, you know, he made sure he didn't go in an orange jumpsuit, picked him out a nice shirt, a white one. You know, he was always looking out for him. And what I found absolutely beautiful was he goes, there's so many stinky people in here, shady people see that they didn't do it, but you can smell that stink on them, you know, the guilt. He goes, you're my beautiful unicorn. He felt the need to protect him. I love their relationship in prison as well.
That was a smashing point, that is. Totally forgot about that bit when he gave him the suit. That was massive.
It was genuine concern and regard for this lad.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, that's when there's a massive point in this bit now, when the jury comes back at 6-6, you know, Helen could say, yeah, I want to do this again, but she decides not to do anything, you know, and say, that's fine, it's a mistrial, he can go free. At that point, you'd think, right, Dennis Box has, you know, done his job, finally.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's where I think we can talk now about the evolution of these characters, you know, pretty quickly. I mean, let's go with Dennis Box, as we mentioned him, Rory. That is pretty much the ultimate, you know, story.
It's
where
it's him being the detective that he should be. Do you know what I mean? It's him not wanting to retire because he felt there was an injustice and he couldn't quit until in his mind. And I think it's not going to be go on and do another series, I think, which is great, because I think it actually wraps the story up how it should do. You don't necessarily need to know who did it, but you need to know that it wasn't Nasir. And I think you believe that at the end. But you see the ramifications of what prison has done to him, his family, and, you know, everything that revolves around it. I think the thing with the whole series is it's not about necessarily the story, but it's how the story is told, which is pivotal. And you see it from all the different angles. And yeah, I think they wrap it up extremely well. And you don't necessarily need that whole. A lot of other series would feel the need to put someone else away for it and keep you, you know, that's completely closed off and that's the end of it. I think this just, I think it wraps it up perfectly. I think that final kind of double episode was just absolutely magnificent.
It's a movie. It was a movie, basically. And then, I mean, what did you, I mean, let's talk about a character. I mean, evolution of Riz Ahmed's character. And that's
I'm glad you came to me with this because...
you were ready, were you?
Yeah, basically...
now you can talk about him going out as well, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, there's like stereotypes of Asian lads. I feel quite comfortable saying this. They're either the studious, work hard, nerdy type, which is what he was portrayed in the beginning, or the hood rat. You get the middle ground, but them are your two usual predominant stereotypes. He went into prison as that nerdy lad who wanted to achieve more than what his parents did, come out as a hood rat. And you know what? When I was watching it towards the end, and I know we were all happy that he didn't do it and he got away, but if you looked at the social elements, he looked really alienated. His old friends didn't want nothing to do with him. Would he get back into college again? Would he want to go back to college after the intense life he's led in prison? And the company he's been keeping, you see him buying drugs. You see him going back to that same place where he took that girl, getting high on him, you know, all by himself, alienated, no friends, kind of felt a bit lost, kind of distant from his family as well, because he actually had it out with his mum that you actually thought I was guilty, you know, so he's lost that connection with his family as well. And you can kind of bet your bottom dollar that this guy is going to end up back in prison for some petty crime. That's what I thought. I thought the system has probably made this boy more corrupt than what he was when he went in, which he wasn't really corrupt. He was just a young lad.
Totally agree. Very impressionable, and it did it. It actually did it to him. Rory, John's evolution as a character. We kind of covered a lot of it, but
yeah,
in a smaller way, in a quicker way for the listeners to digest.
I think we've covered it a lot. In fairness, I think John just shows what a lot of people, maybe normal livelihood, it's kind of powerful message that maybe you can achieve a little bit more if you try. You know, I think he's gone his whole career necessarily kind of avoiding any kind of bigger cases and avoiding taking on any one of that like level of you know, difficult case because he didn't feel he was capable. But actually his evolution and it's his intelligence and it's his care of his client that ultimately kind of changes his fortunes. And yeah, I thought he was, you know, I loved Riz in this. I absolutely loved him, but John was just, he was just incredible. I thought his acting performance was just amazing. He was perfectly cast. I mean, the thing that surprised me is, did you know the pilot had been done for this before with James Gandolfini in that part?
Yeah, and did you know that what's his name, Robert De Niro was also cast and had to drop out in the end? Yeah,
yeah,
madness.
And the thing is, you think what could have been, but then having watched it, you think, oh, I'm so glad that actually John Turturro took the part. He I saw him in an interview. I looked it up and. He was a big friend of James Gandolfini. They're really close friends. And he was quite wary about doing it because he didn't know how much James had done. But then when he'd seen James had only done an episode and not gone deep into the plot and started reading more into it, he realised it's a part he could take on. And I think there was some trepidation, but I think he just did it because he knew what he could bring to the role. And I love it when an actor comes from kind of nowhere in left field and suddenly delivers a performance like that. And Yeah, I mean, McConaughey is always one of those. He did it in True Detective, kind of came from left field and started producing Oscar-worthy stuff. And yeah, I just think he's magnificent, and he's the kind of real star of the show. But yeah, it's close between them.
Yeah, definitely very close. Nin, any other character you want to talk about? Going through,
no.
unless you want to talk about your favourite character, Chandra.
No, I'm so done. You know, she wasn't bad. She was just.
I'm so done.
She had to. She be that naive girl, and she played it down to a T. It wasn't her acting. Her acting's very good. She saw that naive character really well. It just annoyed me that the person leading his case was just a naive young person in general. You know, there was just so much naivety. I'm not going to go into that. I loved Trevor on the stand. He actually had me in stitches. There was a few moments where I laughed. He was certainly one of them. And one of my favourite quotes, and it was in the earlier episodes, and John was taking one of his petty criminals to court, and there was a guy in front of him. I think he was a white Jewish dude, and he got something for 18 months. And then his dude was up, and he's a black guy, and I think he got something like 8 years, I can't remember. And he turns around to the judge, and he goes, how come I don't get due time? And the judge turns around and looks at him and says, if you want due time, be due crime. I literally died at that. It was like the best thing ever.
There were some powerful, quotes in this. I mean, that was a comedy one, but there were some powerful ones when his friend looks at him, or his so-called friend looks at him and says, you need to look people in the eye. Yeah, when you go to this place. And then obviously Freddie's saying to him, what do I do? And he goes, survive. And the way he said it to him, survive, like, you know, proper from the gut, you need to fucking survive. And there was little bits in there where you just looked and you went, sent a bit of a chill going, shit, this is real, man. This is like, this actually, I think it's based on a true story, so it's kind of real, or on the Serial podcast, which definitely was real. So it just kind of sends that tingle for you going, geez, this has happened to someone, or may have, you know, in real life. Actually, they'll be mimicking stories. It's just so mad. Apart from that, I think Helen Weiss, obviously the story with her, the evolution of that character in the end, the way she melted and said no trial, it's massive for a she was so stubborn, you know, the whole show she was the villain. She was a stubborn one. She wanted to twist things to get this guy into jail. And in the end, she's the one who doesn't send him to jail, or at least gets him out, you know, because that sets him free. So massive, massive turn. And obviously they try and set some seeds for the second series by saying she offers, you know, Dennis Box a job, you know, to go and get the real criminal or whatever. So they do try and set something up in case they do want to do it. But I don't think there will be to go after the Don, that is, the stepdad.
No, they want to go after the accountant. No.
Oh, the accountant, that's it.
Because his story, when he was sort of feeding John, John, he made it all too good to be true, that all the evidence and everything points at the stepdad, when really he was taking money out of her account, and they had a massive fight on the night.
Yeah, he was the one she had a conversation with.
Yeah,
so,
he was trying to put his own tracks.
I think it painted it as in, that's the guy. I think that's what it did, and that was that. I don't think you need the second series to feel like actually they've got it wrapped up. But, you know, don't get me wrong, I wouldn't complain to see a second series if it was done right.
I don't think Riz would do it. I don't think you need
no,
to.
No, I don't think Reese would necessarily need to. Yeah. I think if you kept the lawyer standpoint and the detectives, it could go in a different direction. You know, new character, new.
So you basically lose the two main stars out of it. It just would lose a lot, man.
Yeah, I know. True Detective suffered. Same kind of fate, to be fair, in it. It bombed, really, second series. It's quite hard when you're trying to keep the kind of... Yeah, you're not... There's no real need to do another series. I think it's done really well. You didn't throw out a stat at how much it sold.
I'm going to do that next, because I'm just going to ask you both whether there's anything else you want to discuss from the plot or the performances at all, Nin?
No, nothing. I just like the nice little quirk when he was initially held up at the police station and his mum turned up with the food. That is such an Asian mum thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, the Rory, I think I've got one thing left, but is there anything from yourself?
No, I'm just making sure we keep you tied over so we don't have to do a quiz, because I think we'll be talking
No, there won't be one. There won't be one. It's very tough to do a quiz on this one. I think the one last thing that... that I think I took from it was the mother-son relationship, because it looked like he felt really let down by her at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, he was like, did you believe in me? And she was like, yeah. And he goes, no, you didn't. And he just said, "Okay, mom," and walked out. And it just
a very complicated relationship. You know, it's kind of hard to get the head around the mom standpoint and the son standpoint.
Yeah, but it was so well done, and it just shows that nothing's going to be the same again in that household. Mm. You know, it's fucking ruined everything.
Now their lives are ruined.
Even though he's out, it's not going to fix anything, and there's going to be divides between them, and that is so heartbreaking. Because in the end, you think about it, is everything going to be the same again? Now, like Nin said, this guy's changed now. He's gonna go and end up in jail again at some point. And that is the worst part of it. But yeah, anyway, the stats part of this, basically unbelievably, the first episode was only watched by 770,000 people in America. And it's probably only one of the only shows that I've seen over a season. I suppose because only an 8 episode. But when you get like a big 12, 10, 13, or, you know, 20 episode, there's always a little dip somewhere. One episode that people don't watch, you know, and then it shoots up again. But this one, you know, 770,000, 1.28 million, 1.34 million, 1.37 million, 1.41, 1.76, and the finale with 2.16 million people watching it. But I mean, still, those numbers aren't huge, you know?
They're low, but a lot of people will watch this like Nina did, like I did, on demand. On demand, you know? They won't watch it at the time it was aired. It's quite common now.
I think they include on demand, by the way. They're doing.
I don't think they can, mate.
Demand is still off of your TV. If you're talking about, as in people downloading it illegally, that's different. What I mean is,
I don't mean that.
TiVo,
I mean like
TiVo and stuff, they can still do. Yeah, they can.
Okay.
It's still watched.
Okay, yeah, because I saw that those figures related to the actual viewing numbers of the people that sat down when it actually aired on HBO.
They actually include, the adjusted figures now include the TiVo stuff. So, I mean, that's scary because Netflix, like I said on the last one, was like in 14s and 15 millions, you know?
It's the difference, isn't it? You know, it's the availability, it's the accessibility. And this show isn't for everyone, but anyone who's not watched it, I just think you're missing out big time. I think it's incredible.
It is incredible. I mean, that is the killer. I think this is why Netflix and Amazon Prime, they're calling them the TV killer. They are now becoming television killers. But anyway, so we've already talked about, I was going to mention the Golden Globe stuff, you've already done it, and the James Gandolfini stuff, you've already mentioned it. So well done to you. Apart from that, I think we were going to do a whodunit, but I think you both answered that as well. So,
so we did.
So pretty much, you've nailed it all, kids.
Rory, thank you on the box pod post.
Shut the hell up. Right.
I'm not hosting this. I've got enough fun in my own time, you know.
So basically, I just want to say well done, guys. Any final thoughts?
Just go and watch it. If you haven't, can't recommend it enough. Like, we were speaking pre-pod, and I think Rory kind of suggested that it's massively underrated, and it really is a hidden gem.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's a massive hidden gem. I genuinely think it's the best thing I've watched this year, and possibly for longer than this year. I you know, I kind of discount things like Game of Thrones with the budget that they got on, because it's like a film, you know, it's so different. But in terms of real kind of drama and emotion and character development, it's the best thing I've seen since.
Watching it weekly, man, so imagine how hard it was for me.
Oh, I bet it was great weekly in lots of ways. I know it's hard because you want to keep watching, but a weekly thing does have a bit of a,
you look forward to that night.
You think more about it a little bit. You know, when you're watching it and you're binging it, you kind of just absorbing it all in, but probably missing elements.
I got to binge 4 episodes and then I had to watch 4 episodes like everybody else. It was good. It was good. Brilliant TV. As like both have said, they've covered everything in this show really, really well. I think we've gone through a lot of the brilliant scenes. If we've missed anything, you can always shout us at On The Box, at Nina Kowser, at Rory Greenfield, at Gags Tandon. That's our Twitter. Finally, any plugs, people? Rory, any plugs from you, my friend?
We closed the year with a comic awards show, which, I don't know, Marco Lopez just cleaned up on, if we're being honest, or Deadpool. Deadpool, everything. But that was a lot of fun. And there's an article that's just come out with that, which Stu did, which is great. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And then previous to that, we had our great Marvel pod, which is going a few weeks back, but that did really
well. Deadpool
was
good. We loved that. Deadpool was good, but it didn't deserve that many awards, if I'm honest.
See, that, no, it didn't. But it's just what, it's what the buzz carries, you know, that's, it's all about, it was different, you know, that's the thing. People see Marvel as all the same, whereas Civil War was way different. But people don't always see that. They just see, I don't know, what they want.
I mean, I thought Batman and Superman deserved so many awards. It was unbelievable. Anyway, this is on the box. Nin, any plugs from you, my dear?
Nina Kaz's show on New Year's Eve. Tune into that. Hopefully we win. And who knows, I might have something else up my sleeve. Spoiler alert.
You might have a what?
I might have something up my sleeve coming out.
Okay, let's see. Wow, what's she
Spoiler alert.
This one's up to loads. Anyway, on my side, there's something massive coming. There's the AI Audible work coming out. So Mr. Trevor Downey is now on board. So in the new year, that will be kicking off. It's absolutely monstrous piece of work for somebody to do. So fair play to Trev. And I'm sure myself and Nin will be helping out in some way, shape or form from time to time. But yeah, so that's going to be big. And make sure you do, if you do find it hard to read all of our content, you'll now be able to listen to it. It's absolutely a huge concept. A lot of good feedback from people just from the first few that have been out. Another one went out today. So yeah, keep an eye on those. And yeah, go listen to both of my guest shows, AI Comic Pod, AI Spotlight, which I'm sure will come in the new year as well. And then Nina's Weekly NKS. And we were on Disney too, so that's out. Make sure you check that out. Bargy will kill me for not plugging Desi. So yes, please do go check everything out on the app. Download it. Do it. This is On The Box. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Nina. Thank you, Rory. Good night.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.